A reading from the Gospel of Mark. When the sixth hour came, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. At the ninth hour, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you deserted me?" Some of those who stood by heard this and said, "Listen, he's calling on Elijah." Someone ran and soaked a sponge in vinegar, putting it on a reed, gave it to him to drink, saying, "Wait and see if Elijah will come to take him down." But Jesus gave a loud cry and breathed his last. And the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The centurion who was standing in front of him had seen how he had died, and he said, "In truth, this man was a son of God." When the Sabbath was over, Mary of Magdala, Mary, the mother of James, and Salome brought spices with which to go and anoint him. Very early in the morning, on the first day of the week, they went to the tomb, just as the sun was rising. They had been saying to one another, "Who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance to the tomb?" When they looked, they could see that the stone, which was very big, had already been rolled back. On entering the tomb, they saw a young man in a white robe seated on the right-hand side, and they were struck with amazement. But he said to them, "There is no need for alarm. You are looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See, here is the place where they laid him." The Gospel of the Lord. My father died 6 years ago, and I was in Leicester, came up to Glasgow. He was 89, been ill for a while, so it wasn't a big shock. I went round to view his body, as is the custom in Celtic parts. Two coffins always left open, and various members of the family and friends were there, so they wanted a few words, so I read the Gospel of Luke. And the Gospel of Luke has the same words of the angels, but slightly different order. I think, "He is not here, he has risen." And as I'd been travelling, I'd remembered places that he'd visited on the way down to visit me in Leicester, places I'd been in Oxford. As I arrived in Glasgow, I thought places he'd been. It occurred to me that phrase, "He has risen, he's not here," or "He's not here, he has risen," is actually where the dead are. In the middle of that sentence, right in the heart of that sentence. Because the dead are not risen, but they're not here. They're absent. But an absence is a sort of presence. You look at places where someone was, and their absence is something you can feel, touch. People who are regular, we can look at the places you'd expect them to be and know they're not there. The things that they did, shops they went to, pubs they went to, work they went to, places empty. That emptiness is actually a sort of presence. Their life itself becomes an absence if we remember them. But they're not risen. They have not risen as Christ has risen. That's why I say they're in the middle. Not Christ, equally not alive as Christ is alive. Not alive as we are promised life eternal. Somewhere in the middle. That's, I think, how we understand the dead and how we concern for the dead. Their absence is a memory. It's also the hope. Because that absence itself is what has to be filled, has to become their risen life. In fact, those people who leave great absences in life, who leave great emptiness, great holes, will have a greater resurrection. The greater the absence, the greater the rising again. And yet, even there we should say that the rising again is so great, it really doesn't matter that much how great an absence they leave behind, because it is so overwhelmed by the greatness of life in Christ, that life we cannot imagine, a life which really it doesn't do us good to think about too much, because nothing more depressing than trying to imagine eternal happiness. Eternal happiness is beyond our conception. What eye has not seen, what ear have not heard, neither have it entered into the heart of man the things the Father has prepared for those who love him. No, we can't imagine eternal happiness, but we can certainly be aware of the absence in our life of those we have cared for and loved. They're not here, but not risen. Christ is risen, and so we trust that he will rise. Here on earth, we have to work for that resurrection. That's our purpose. It's a great loss for so many Christians that they do not pray for the dead. It's not just that they're failing to work a service for the dead, they're also failing to understand the true nature of the resurrection. The resurrection is greater than we can imagine, but not so great that it abandons the material of this life. It's we who rise, our human life, which is raised up to share a divinity. And as such, we can't understand or imagine that greatness or the resurrection's nature, or what it's even like to be happy forever. But we can look at what we have been and say, if only we could that be more, something greater, something transformed. If only the absence could become filled up again. Not with just the old life, but something greater. And to pray for the dead is to believe in the resurrection. To pray for the dead is to believe in the mystery of the wonder we are promised, the thing that is overwhelmingly greater than our minds and hearts, and our aspirations or thoughts or desires, and yet still made out of this life, out of what we are. Why look for the dead among the living, we're told in Luke? He's not here. He has risen. And those we have lost are not here. But they will rise. They will rise in Christ.